We're talking with municipal leaders from all over Wisconsin as part of a series to better understand what local governments are going through. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you're here. Our next stop is the Village of Brown Deer, encompassing 4.5 square miles in northern Milwaukee County. It's considered one of Milwaukee's North Shore suburbs. U.S. Census figures show it grew by about 500 residents since the 2010 census. Do you live in a village? Maybe Brown Deer. What sets it apart? Join in with issues and observations about village life, 800-642-1234. Wanda Montgomery has served on the Brown Deer Village Board since 2018, has been village president since 2019. Wanda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, and good morning to you and to your guests.
Good morning. Let's start by touring us around, if you will. Give us a snapshot of what Brown Deer is like.
Well, Brown Deer is a small community nestled on the north west side of kind of the lake of Milwaukee County. We're the furthest north of the North Shore. So there are 7 communities in the North Shore, and we're at the tip. Mm-hmm. Of that, the North Shore area. A snapshot of us is that we are, I know that we are the most diverse community in the North Shore area of Milwaukee County. We're small, we're quaint, but we are mighty in the people that live here, the services that we offer. And we're growing. When I say growing, not so much more in population, but growing with new people moving in. You know, we have a lot of folks who have been here for a number of years who may be aging and moving to other communities. And then we're getting a lot of new young families that are moving back into the village and certainly looking to be here for years to come. I think we do have a good mix, not just diversity in race and ethnicity, but also in age and gender and social economic background. And so it's just a great place to be. It's kind of like the saying, Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee, a great place on a great lake. Mm-hmm. Well, Brown Deer is a great place on the North Shore.
Mm-hmm. Going back to diversity, Brown Deer, as you said, much more diverse North Shore suburb than your counterparts, than the communities around you. What do you see as the opportunities or the challenges that you find in your demographics?
Well, the opportunities is I think people come here because they feel comfortable. They can see themselves. And not only see themselves in the residents that live here, but also the representation of our village board and our staff, the police department and other departments within the village. Certainly some of the challenges are everybody doesn't embrace diversity. Hmm. And so you may find some challenges there, but I think we're working through it because there are people who've been here for a long time and they welcome it. It's like anything. If when you buy a house, you want to be in a place that not only you, maybe your spouse or your partner, but your children can grow and, grow in their area, whether it's school, whether it's work, the community as a whole. So always challenges are being able to meet all the needs of all the different people that are here and not be just single focus on, maybe what the majority may want, but really embracing everyone.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Wanda Montgomery, who's been Brown Deer Village president since 2019. And these conversations with municipal leaders across Wisconsin, part of a series to get at the heart of local government issues. And with what you're seeing, do you live in the village of Brown Deer? What questions do you have about how the village is managed? What suggestions do you have for its board president? 800-642-1234. You know, maybe one thing that sets sets itself apart is that you really like to meet new residents. You like to talk to people who settle in Brown Deer, perhaps walking up to the door and really hearing someone's story. Is this true? You personally meet new residents?
Yes, I do. I started this, once I campaigned twice within a year span, and then into my second year, the start of my second year as president is when COVID hit. And so you weren't able to really host events and be out at a lot of public events. And but people did not stop buying homes. And so I don't even know where it came from. I just thought, I want to meet new people that are moving into the village. So I masked up. I started going on Zillow and other places to find where new homes were purchased because I reached out and the village doesn't necessarily keep track of that. Mm-hmm. Now I could go down to Milwaukee County and go through the microfiche, they told me, and look up new homeowners, but that doesn't necessarily hit right away. It could take some time before all those documents were found. So I used Zillow for a while. And I went to the dollar store here in Brown Deer that opened up in the last 2 years, purchased cards, and then got the addresses of new homeowners and just went to the homes, rang the doorbell, and gave them this card, welcome to your new home, with my business card in it, and let them know that if I could be of assistance to them at all, my phone number was there and my email address. And so I started that, like I said, before last year. So in 2020. And now I have probably reached over 250 homes that way.
Wow.
And now I've gotten a little smarter. And there's a realtor who is in Brown Deer, and she can provide me with the list of all new homes that have been sold. I would love to be able to do apartments, but that's a little more challenging. Mm-hmm. So if the home has gone through normal processes of purchasing, I get a list at the end of the month, and I do my cards, and I go and knock on those doors. Now, what has happened, another resident reached out to me and said, what do you use for your cards? And I told her, and she said, why don't you just do a card? You can, do a picture and do, I said, well, no, I can't, but can you? And so he said, yes. And so she's designed a picture cards for me, and it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. So now my picture is actually on the card with contact information, and I put the, It makes it easier, so I don't have to sign each card. I just put it in an envelope with my business card, and I still do the same thing. So I have 20 cards now that I have from the month of November, and I just got the list for the month of December. So on average, it's about 20 to 25 new homeowners each month.
Hmm. What have you learned or taken away from those little exchanges? Any anecdotes that you can share from doing this?
Well, what I have learned is, number one, the diversity is true. I mean, I've met people not only from different races and ethnicities, but people from all over the country and beyond. Hmm. I've met old and young. I've met people who are just starting their families, some who are Brown Deer is their retirement, some who are moving back to this area because now they can work virtual and they're moving back to be closer to families. But I also learned that there are people that, when you buy a home, most people do their due diligence. And so they want to be here. And then they also want to know, how can I be engaged? And so then I began to build that network. And as I have opportunities to appoint people to committees or invite them to different events, I already have that built-in base.
Hmm. You already have those connections, that
right.
Initial communication as the first step. We have Brown Deer Village President Wanda Montgomery taking us through her village and what she takes on as a suburb north of Milwaukee. Have you tried to find housing in the village of Brown Deer or another village in Wisconsin? How difficult has your search been? How has your village dealt with annexing land. How do you see your village or brown deer changing? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Wanda Montgomery here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with municipal leaders from all over Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Brown Deer Village President Wanda Montgomery is here. The village is the North Shore area's most ethnically diverse suburb with about 32% African-American residents. That's new census figures there. What do you think of Brown Deer's proximity to Milwaukee and transportation options? What do you see as selling points for living in a village? What are drawbacks? Join in 800-642-1234. Wanda Montgomery with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's talk about housing. Housing is straining so many communities in Wisconsin, struggling with a shortage. What is the situation like in Brown Deer as you go door to door?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is houses in Brown Deer over the last year and a half have not stayed on the market very long. So when people put them on the market, I've seen them sell in 3 to 4 days. And the prices on a lot of these houses have increased significantly. The challenge we have in terms of expanding houses in Brown Deer is we're landlocked. So we don't have any place to build unless we have, you know, a developer that comes in and says, you know, I want to build new houses here. However, and we're looking at this right now, after the first of the year, we'll be exploring a little bit more of creating a new TIF district in Brown Deer, where we might be able, I don't know if there'll be houses, it could be some townhomes or condos, but looking at some mixed use areas in the village along Brown Deer Road and Green Bay. But in terms of other places in the village, there's just nowhere to build. There are a couple of private lots, but they're not that big. And then, so that's our challenge. And like I said, I've had people reach out to me to say, I'm looking to purchase a house at this amount, and they can't find it. Because as I said, the houses are selling for a lot more than they were a few years ago. And I also get contacted from people that want more low-income housing. Or apartments in Brown Deer, senior living complex. Again, there's nowhere to build that right now unless we get a proposal from someone maybe after we create a new TIF district. So that could be something that would come down the pike in a year or two, but nothing right now. We did just in the original village of Brown Deer build a new apartment complex. It started in 2020, completed last year. I believe it has about 170 units, 1, 2, and 3 bedroom apartments, and I think it may be about 10 townhomes. We're in the midst right now of another apartment complex in the original village with, and these are all market rate, and that will have about 130 units, I believe. And so those are all in the original village, which is kind of where we started. And so you have stores there, some other resources that people can access just by walking through the original village. That's where the Oakley Trail comes through.
And I want to pause there on the original village, just with some historical context here, as you talk about being landlocked. And Brown Deer has some interesting and somewhat fraught history with annexation going back to the 50s. And some residents in your area did not want their community to be part of Milwaukee, organized to incorporate as a village in order to avoid that annexation. Milwaukee challenged that, going all the way to the state Supreme Court. So what are those lingering effects of those conflicts over land and annexation?
Like I said, the original village was kind of this space that people wanted to protect, so to speak. And that's pretty much on the east side of Brown Deer. The part that was annexed was the west side and south. So, you know, where the original village is, they wanted to kind of protect that. But a few years ago, there was a church and a school, which is pretty large portion of the original village. And that had been vacated from the church and the school. And so that became a major eyesore in the original village. You know, you had this huge property that had busted out windows, and it just did not look appealing at all. And there was no way that a church or a school was going to come back and revamp that. And so the village board worked with, it was part of a TIF district, and we worked with a developer to come in and put something new there. The other part of the original village is where our public works building was, and that we sold to a developer because we moved the DPW building over to the same area that the police department and health department and the village hall were located. So again, you know, this is so far removed. We would love to be able to get back some of that land. But as you probably know, that's not going to happen in this day and time to pull it back to Brown Deer. So we work with what we have and try and improve it and make it as best as we can for all residents that live here.
We're talking with Wanda Montgomery, president of the Village of Brown Deer. We've been having these conversations with municipal leaders to better understand the issues at the local level with your insights at 800-642-1234. Let's look at transportation and being that suburb of Milwaukee. Residents might be commuting to work back and forth every day. That proximity, so important to you. What are your transportation options? Is public transit meeting the needs of your residents?
I believe it's meeting the needs of the residents. We have, you know, main thoroughfares that the public transportation, Milwaukee County transit system goes down Brown Deer Road, Green Bay, 60th Street. So on some of the main streets, it could be challenging for people that are coming to work in Brown Deer from Milwaukee or other communities, because the buses may not go past, and they don't go past, say, north of 60th on 51st or on 60th. And there are a number of small manufacturing businesses. And so what people end up doing is taking the bus as far as they can and then walking a block or two to get to their work sites. So I know that there's some discussion now about adding more routes, but I don't know that those routes will go again past Brown Deer Road, because most of that area is residential. The key places that we would have the small manufacturing companies are just north of 51st and Brown Deer Road, and a little bit north of 60th. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And you know, we end on the west side at 68th. And so there is a bus that goes down Brown Deer Road. And then on the east side, there is a bus that comes down Green Bay to the marketplace, which is on Green Bay and just north of Brown Deer Road.
I want to look for a moment at fire and emergency medical services really putting smaller communities in a jam, not enough funding for the volume of 911 calls, not enough staffing, and volunteer fire departments, you know, simply aging out. How are you dealing with these first responder public service issues?
Well, we're not unique to any other community, but what we've done in the North Shore, and this was created, I think, maybe 20 years ago, and I don't have the exact date, but in the North Shore, we have a North Shore Fire Department. So it encompasses all seven communities. Mm-hmm. And so we work together as it relates to those services. You know, we have different stations in each one of our municipalities, except River Hills. However, we cover all of the North Shore. And we also have that mutual aid where we can go into Milwaukee and based on what's going on in one of our municipalities, they can come here. Now, the challenge, of course, just what you said, we have an aging population. In the last, something else that I've done in my tenure as president, I try to attend every retirement of a fire official or a fireman in the North Shore. So in the last month, I've attended three. And so we have a number of people who are retiring, but we don't have as many going into that line of work. And so our commission, which consists of representatives from each one of the municipalities, are looking at ways that they can recruit more people to that profession. And we compete with a larger, more financed, and surely not completely financed, but with the city of Milwaukee.
Larger city, and right, so there. Wanda, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with the story from 2019 about a unique ice fishing tournament in Luck, Wisconsin.
A classic Wisconsin winter activity is making its way into the world of high school sports. Ice fishing teams are popping up in schools across the state. Taylor Pomisol recently threw on her parka to meet some of the student fish wranglers.
It's the first high school ice fishing tournament of the year. Coaches are distributing bait. Student fish wranglers are driving out onto the ice via four-wheeler to find the perfect fishing spot.
It's one of those things that if you do it as a kid, you start to do it as an adult and you can carry it on. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those, you know, one of those things that a kid should get the opportunity to do.
For these students, winter means spending time outside for a more non-traditional high school sport. Wendy Dahlman is the president of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Fishing Association and the head coach of Prairie Farm. She says high school ice fishing teams started in 2012, but there are already more than 1,200 students and 100 schools involved statewide.
This sport is growing every year, so it's pretty cool to see. As you drove in, you could see the amount of trailers and trucks and buses and whatnot in the parking lots.
Though the high school competition is new, schools across Wisconsin are getting involved. Jack Springett is in his second year at Amory High School.
It's different. Nobody does it, so why not? Mm-hmm. It's fun.
And sophomore CJ Peterson is hoping Somerset's new team can make an impactful debut.
Hopefully you can do good this year. Hopefully you place in top 20 schools.
Preparation for the Saturday tournament starts the week before. Teams are packing and organizing bait, while organizers check ice and prepare prizes. On the day of the tournament, students get up early and head to the lake. Michaelin Christensen is in her second year at Prairie Farm.
I got woke up at 5:30, and I laid in bed until 6.
Prairie Farm junior Briley Hansen says the day starts with finding the perfect spot to drill and set bait.
You find the depth, bring it up a couple feet, set the minnow on, and then set the tip up.
Oh, guys, you got tip up.
The excitement and challenges,
you caught two already,
don't stop until the fish are collected and the winner is determined. The season starts at the end of December and can go into March. Since the tournaments are on Saturdays, many students can balance their love of fishing and the outdoors with a school sport.
We're also in basketball, but this is like on the weekends and it's just a lot of fun. You get to spend time outside with your friends, and a lot of time we just sit in a heated shack and enjoy fishing while warm.
Dolman says being on the ice can teach people about balance, conservation, and natural resources. It also gives students with different backgrounds a chance to compete together. Most teams don't require any experience to join.
Well, I had two girls out here that never handled an ice auger before, and they both drilled their own hole and set their own tip up, so. Mm-hmm.
Parents are also encouraged to enjoy a day on the ice with their fish wranglers.
And what a great bonding experience for families to get out with their kids and, mm-hmm. and you know, just be in the outdoors.
Christensen's dad, John Barthman, says the family's love of fishing and great memories on the ice make the cold Saturday mornings worth it.
Sometimes she teaches me, sometimes I teach her.
In the future, the sport hopes to expand throughout the Midwest and create more regional tournaments. A middle school component is being considered for the state.
That story was produced by Taylor Pomisel, a Wisconsin Public Radio intern based in Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now to migration trends and Wisconsin's declining birth rate. The 2020 census put Wisconsin's population growth at 3.6% over the decade. So why is our state growing slowly? Why is that problematic? What do you see? How has your community's population changed? And if you moved to Wisconsin in recent years, what brought you here? Join in 800-642-1234. Dale Knapp is Director of Research and Analytics for the Wisconsin Counties Association and Director of the Research Organization Forward Analytics. Dale, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Great to be back on public radio in the morning.
Good morning. So the smallest 10-year increase in population in our state's history, what forces are contributing to the stagnant population growth?
Well, it's really a combination of a couple of forces. One is migration. We've known this for a while that really since the mid-2000s, we've been struggling in terms of net migration. And if you look over the decade, we had about 54,000 people on net moving to the state, but that's down from about 80,000 between 2000, 2010, and over 220,000 during the 1990s. So that's part of it. The second part is something, again, that we've written about quite a bit, and that's the declining number of births. Since 2007, the number of births in Wisconsin has declined in every year but one. And if you look at the number of births in 2020, they were at the lowest they've been since 1942. So, you know, that is the other factor that's driving that. And that's driving a second trend that's really problematic long term for us, in that our youth population, the under 18 population, was down 4.3% over the decade.
I want to get at that migration issue. It sounds like what you're saying, every inbound matters, every outbound matters a lot too. In looking at our country's move rate record, record lows in 2020, the Census Bureau's current population survey says only 8% of Americans moved from one U.S. home to another between March 2020 and March 2021. So if we're at the lowest domestic migration pace since the government started tracking this data, you know, decades ago, 70 some years ago, then what does that say? What are the implications of that really low rate of migration?
Well, when you look at, I mean, for Wisconsin, it's really troubling because, again, when you look at right now, when you look at our young population, the under 18 population, compared to the number of people that are expected to retire over the next 15 to 20 years, we're about 10 to 15% short. So when you look at our demographics right now, we're looking at, without migration, we're looking at a stagnant or possibly declining workforce over the next 10 or 15 years. So that's why migration is so important for Wisconsin over the next decade or so. And so, you know, in the face of overall declines in movement, that's going to be a challenge. But we have to figure out a way to really get out the word that Wisconsin is really a good place to you know, live, work, play, great education, et cetera. So migration is just going to be so critical for us over the next decade.
What are those implications to the workforce? We're seeing huge labor force challenges, an extremely tight labor market, help wanted signs everywhere still. So what are the population implications at the intersection of this workforce shortage?
Well, sort of that there's really two sides to it. You know, one is on the employer side. We're just going to continue to see this struggle to find workers. And so growing a business is going to be challenging. Starting a new business in which you need employees is going to be a challenge. And so on that side, it's just going to be a struggle. And at this point, really, there's no light at the end of the tunnel that we can see. On the other side of it, it's going to be good for workers, because that workforce shortage is tending to push up wages, particularly at the bottom end of the wage scale. We did a report a couple years ago, and we saw this, even prior to the pandemic, that with a tightening workforce, we were seeing wages at the lower end of the pay scale moving up significantly. You know, it's sort of everybody that, everybody's sort of expanding their pool of workers that they're willing to look at because of the workforce shortage, and that's pushing up wages at the bottom end. So for the work on the worker side, it's going to be a good something that's good for them.
So this net migration, we're not in this alone. States like Illinois and Michigan are also facing these issues. What does it look like for our neighbors? How do we compare?
Well, Illinois is a special case, because Illinois, one of the things we've seen over the past, about the past decade, is with all of the fiscal challenges that are going on in Illinois, we've really seen a lot of people leaving that state. They were the second largest in terms of net migration out. And so I think we don't have the numbers yet in terms of exactly where they're going. But it looks like Wisconsin was probably, benefiting from that. You look at Iowa is very similar to us. They've got some of the similar demographic challenges. And Minnesota is a little bit unique in that, about two-thirds of their economy is the Minneapolis area.
Twin Cities.
Which has been very attractive. And so they're doing a little bit better in terms of overall net migration. That said, we're about even with them in terms of movement back and forth between the two states. So we have about as many people leaving Wisconsin to go to Minnesota as those coming from Minnesota to Wisconsin.
We're talking about a new study called Slowing Down Wisconsin's Waning Population Growth, led by Dale Knapp. He's director of Forward Analytics. That's a research arm of the Wisconsin Counties Association. Where do you think Wisconsin's economy is headed? Are you thinking of retiring? Are you just getting into the workforce? Where does the labor shortage rank among your list of concerns? Do you want Wisconsin to go after remote workers with incentives to move here? What would that look like? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Dale Knapp here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing what to make of Wisconsin population trends here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A noteworthy side note to this conversation, United Van Lines has been tracking migration patterns since the late 70s. It published its annual National Mover Study this week, showing how Americans were on the move in 2021. Wisconsin's total inbound, they said, was 48%, total outbound 52%. Our neighbor Illinois, as we've been talking about by comparison, is ranked among the states with the largest exodus, with 67% outbound by United Van Lines data. Where are you moving to and why? How is your community adjusting to population changes? What are the pain points? 800-642-1234. Dale Knapp, director of Forward Analytics, is with us. So, Dale, United Van Lines, merely a snapshot. I get it. One indicator of migration patterns. But I find it interesting to look at where people are going with their moving truck. What do you think of this kind of indicator?
Well, there's a couple of things that are going on. One is when you look at the census numbers, the pattern has been people are moving south and west. That, you know, nationally, that's what's going on. But there's another thing, especially in 2020 and now again in 2021, that I think is going on that we kind of forget about, is that with remote work, there are a lot of companies that have made remote work permanent. And so people are able to move in some cases wherever they want and work remotely. And so that's kind of changing. I think that's going to change the pattern of movement to some degree. And I think Wisconsin can benefit from that, that, you know, attracting remote workers. There are a lot of people that enjoy what Wisconsin has to offer, but because of pay, because of whatever it is, they're working in another state. The remote work option allows Wisconsin to attract workers. Now, the remote workers aren't going to help us with our workforce, but if they're bringing family members, if they're bringing a spouse, that's going to help us. If they're bringing children,
there's a ripple effect
in the long term. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that remote work world, there is that census data that shows the population of 9 rural northern counties grew 6.7% as a group. What might be going on there?
That was one of the big question marks we had when we were looking at the county data. You're talking about 9 counties up north. Now, these counties are, in terms of housing stock, they have the most vacation homes relative to total housing stock, you know, in the state. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of vacation homes. So there's a couple of things that can be going on. One is that some people were working remote up there at their vacation homes.
Mm-hmm.
And because the response to the census was extended a couple of times, they may have filled out the census form at that residence and listed it as their permanent residence. We don't know. The other more likely thing that's going on is that retirees are moving north permanently or semi-permanently to those counties. We really won't have a good handle on that until the detailed age numbers come out from the census. We'll be able to then really get a better sense of what's going on. But it looks like it's retirees. That's sort of my best guess, which, you know, the population growth, it looks superficially that it's going to be good for these counties. But if they're retirees, it doesn't help them with their workforce problem.
Sam from Menominee called in, couldn't stay with us. And Sam is getting into some really great nuance here. I would like some clarification, Dale, on the declining birth rates. Is it that fewer parents are having children, or is it that we have an older population and there are less people of child-rearing age?
It's a combination.
Okay.
You know, if you look over the longer term, we actually have, we've had a decline in the number of women in their childbearing years. So that's part of it. The second part of it is that young people are having, at least at this point, are having fewer children. Now, the research shows that when you ask younger women, how many children are you planning to have? Are you thinking about having over, you know, over your childbearing years? That hasn't changed that much. It's still in the roughly the 2 to 3 children range. But in actuality, so far, they're having fewer children. Now, some of this is we're seeing, you know, more children being born to those 30 to 34 and really 35 to 39. So there's some of this which is pushing having children off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that's going on there. So again, because the surveys show that their desire kind of is to have more children, that ultimately we may not see as much of a decline, but you know, most demographers were predicting that these birth rates were going to turn up, you know, 6-7 years ago, and they haven't, and that's troubling.
Dale Knapp with us, Director of Research and Analytics for the Wisconsin Counties Association. Let's take a call. Chris in Spring Green. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. What's on your mind about population?
I would like to ask about immigration from other countries. We need population here in Wisconsin for our labor force. And I've been to South America a few different times, and there are very good people down there. They're hardworking, and all they want is a chance. I would think that our government would want to encourage people to come here from Central and South America.
Chris, thank you. Dale Knapp, what about immigration from Central America and refugees from Afghanistan?
Well, you know, we can talk about the international migration sort of in general, because I don't think it's just South America. It's really everywhere. You know, the workforce shortage is a national problem, and we're finally really starting to see some people really talking about the fact that we really need international migration to solve our national demographic problem. And when you look at Wisconsin, you know, in terms of net migration, what's kept us positive really has been international migration. So that's one thing that has been helping us. But again, obviously the numbers show it's not nearly enough. Mm. The problem is obviously that immigration has become such a hot button issue that it's hard for me right now to envision any progress on
on that
expanding
front.
Mm-hmm. Immigration nationally. That's one of the big issues.
Let's try to squeeze in one more question here from Gary and Ripon. Gary, short on time, go ahead.
Does the guest think that it's possible for there to be enough people in the world?
Will there ever be enough people here in Wisconsin, the world, Dale?
Well, I guess that's a hard question to answer. I'm not sure what enough is. You know, I think what Wisconsin has to think about seriously is at this point, you know, we've been living in a world with a growing population, and we've accustomed to that. We have to really think of a heart about what's it going to be like with a stagnant or declining population, and how do we adapt to that? Because everything right now points to that challenge. And, you know, maybe we have to look to Japan, who's been experiencing, you know, some of these demographic problems for decades. Hmm. And see what works. But we're going to have to seriously look at what our state's going to look like in 10 years and figure out how we're going to adapt to that. Because I think that's by all indications, that's where we're headed.
Dale, thank you for joining us.
I was glad to be here this morning, Kate.
Dale Knapp, Director of Research and Analytics for the Wisconsin Counties Association. We have a link, by the way, to the Forward Analytics report called Slowing Down. It's at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're with us on the Ideas Network.